I think it's 3 o'clock now, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we can start. Welcome to a short sutta class at here at Nolamara. I have selected a sutta from the Majjhima Nikaya, the middle length discourses, which I'm going to go through. And I have some extra small bits and pieces I want to add in addition. I've selected a quite simple sutta, but it's a good sutta with lots of good advices, big perspective. I remember read this. There is another sutta, the one which is called the Noble Search in the Majjhima Nikaya. It says that the Buddha was describing everybody who is following the Buddha's path. He compared them to lotus flowers who are growing up, and some of them are born under the water and live their life under the water. Other lotus flowers, they rise higher up, so they float on the top of the water and then live their life on the top of the water. While other, again, they actually manage to rise above the water. And that's where they live. So different, and that is like spiritual seekers who want to develop towards the final goal spiritually. And on that way, which take a long way, there are suttas like this, which is good to have on board while we're walking. I think the deepest teachings of the Buddha about having a rebirth in an extremely high Brahma realm or even Nirvana, that is a long-term spiritual development, really long-term. I honestly think it's something which will go across lifetimes for most kind of Buddhists. And this sutta is a sutta which helps people going from life to life and keeps people on the right track. Unless there is something I should do, this is the first time I've done a sutta class here, unless there's something else we do in the beginning, I just start by doing a Namo Tassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Just see where I can find my notes here. So what I will do, I will start with the first part, and then after two or three paragraphs, I'm going to stop and read out something else, and then we continue with the rest of the sutta. So this is how it goes. This is Majjhima Nikaya 135. It is translated by Bhikkhu Bodhi as the shorter exposition of action. So this is what we read out here is the one coming from a wisdom publication. And it goes like this. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living in Savatthi, in Jeta Grove, Anathapindika's park. Then the Brahmin student Subha, Tudeya's son, went to the Blessed One and exchanged greetings with him. When his courteous and amiable talk was finished, he sat down at one side and asked the Blessed One, Master Gotama, what is the cause and condition why human beings are seen to be inferior or superior. For people are seen to be short-lived and long-lived, sickly and healthy, ugly and beautiful, uninfluential and influential, poor and wealthy, low-born or high-born, stupid and wise. What is the cause and condition, Master Gautama, why human beings are seen to be inferior and superior? And this is so easy to see. It's so down to earth. We see this if we look at people around us. Somebody has just born into this extremely rich family. Just because they're born into a family, they're just rich the rest of their life. Why? So unfair. And somebody going to school, and they're so smart, and it looks like they don't need to study so much. While others, they have to study and study and study and study, and still they don't really get the best grades. So there are people have different characteristics, and the Buddha is here telling why. And what the Buddha is saying here, students, beings are owners of their actions, heirs of their actions. They originate from their actions, are bound to their actions, and they have their actions as their refuge. It is action that distinguishes beings as inferior and superior. So this is the Buddhist term karma, which is Sanskrit, or kamma in Pali, K-A-M-M-A. Your actions, what you do. And what the Buddha is saying here is that what you do will come back to you. You own your actions. You inherit your actions. So if you do something, you're doing to yourself. And that's why I want to add something from outside, from something in addition. Because I looked up in at Wikipedia. Because this idea about karma exists in so many other traditions, somehow, in some little variations. And I just want to see what... Is that really true? Is that karma? Is that in all traditions? And I found this one text in Wikipedia, which is really, really, really good. I'm just going to read it out now. So this law, which we call karma, is the principle of treating others as one would wish to be treated. It is a maxim of altruism seen in many human religions and human cultures. This maxim may appear as either positive or negative injunction governing conduct. For example, it goes like this: one should treat others as one would like others to treat oneself. Or one should not treat others in a way that one would not like to be treated yourself. And the third, what you wish upon others, you wish upon yourself. So that's like three variations of this law, or this maxim. And this concept occurs in many forms in nearly every religion and ethical tradition. It can also be explained from perspectives of psychology, philosophy, sociology, human evolution, and economics as well. I learned this at business school. And the nice thing about this little article is that they refer to traditions who have been upholding this idea a long time. And the earliest source they have found is in ancient Egypt, 4,000 years ago. And they write here that possibly the earliest affirmation of this maxim of reciprocation is from what they call the Middle Kingdom in ancient Egypt, which lasted from around 2000 BC. So that is around 4,000 years ago, a long time before the Buddha. And what you can read from those ancient texts we have from that time is like this. There's two examples here. Do to the doer to make him do. And another one is, that which you hate to be done to you, do not do to another. And that is a long time ago in Egypt. And then the Buddha, he was around 600 BC, roughly. Yeah, 400 or 500 BC. Researchers are kind of quarreling about this, and I just say whatever, really. We know roughly, it's like 400, 500, 600 BC. Normally I say 500 BC. And then in ancient China, 500 BC, China at that time, there was traditions like Muism and Taoism and Confucianism. An example from those traditions is, never impose on others what you would not choose for yourself. That was in China, when around the time when the Buddha was alive. And then in ancient Greece, 400 BC, and they say that this maxim was a common principle in ancient Greek philosophy. And here's two examples they used in Greece, 400 BC. What you do not want to happen to you, do not do to yourself either. And do not do to others that which angers when they do it to you. Then in Persia, in this, they had this religion at that time. This is 300 BC. I think you pronounce it Zoroastrianism. And in that tradition, they also have this idea. There's two examples. The nature alone is good, which refrains from doing to another whoever is not good for itself. And whatever is disagreeable to yourself, do not do to unto others. So that was in Persia. And then around year zero, with the Christianity and Jesus, the Christians have coined this principle around in the 16th century. They call it the golden rule. And the famous quote from Jesus was, do to others what you want them to do to you. So this principle, or this rule, or this law about karma, or small variations of karma, has existed for such a long time, and it is part of so many different traditions. So that is the reason why people are long-lived or sickly or healthy or ugly or beautiful or uninfluential and poor and wealthy, etc. And it's not only Buddhism who's teaching this. This has been taught for a long, long, long time. This also includes rebirth. So for those who are kind of skeptical to rebirth, basically, what the Buddha is saying here is that those actions you do now, as you will see later on in the text, that is something which comes back to you, either in this life or the upcoming lives, when your body is old and it falls away, and then in your next type of existence, somehow, somewhere, those actions you do today will come back. So do lots of good things so you can get lots of things coming back, good things coming back to you. So then I continue the reading of this of the story. Then this student who asked the question, he said, "I do not understand in detail the meaning of Master Gautama's statement, which he spoke in brief without expounding the meaning in detail. It would be good if Master Gautama would teach me the Dhamma so I might understand in detail the meaning of Master Gautama's statement." And then the Buddha answers, "Then, student, listen and attend closely to what I shall say." "Yes, sir," the Brahmin student Subha replied, and the Buddha, he said this. And then what's common here now is that there's pairs of paragraphs coming down which belongs to each other, and one is positive and one is negative for each of these basically six main points. So we start with paragraph 5 and 6. "Here, students, some man or woman kills living beings and is murderous, bloody-handed, given to blow and violence, merciless to living beings. And because of performing and undertaking such action, on the dissolution of the body, after death, he reappears in a state of deprivation, an unhappy destination, in perdition, even in hell. But if, on the dissolution of the body, after death, he does not reappear in a state of deprivation, in an unhappy destination, in perdition, in hell, but instead comes back to a human state, then, wherever he is reborn, he is short-lived. This is the way, student, that leads to short life. Namely, one kills living beings, is murderous, bloody-handed, given to blows and violence, merciless to living beings. But here, students, some men and women abandon the killing of living beings. They abstain from killing living beings, with rod and weapons laid aside, gentle and kind. He abides compassionate to all living beings. And because of performing and undertaking such actions, on dissolution of the body, after death, he reappears in a happy destination, even in a heavenly world. But if one, on the dissolution of the body, after death, he does not reappear in a happy destination, in a heavenly world, but instead comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is long lived. This is the way, student, that leads to long life, namely, abandoning the killing of living beings. One abstains from killing living beings, with rod and weapon laid aside, gentle and kindly, one abides compassionate to all living beings. So if you want long life, then abstain from killing and be kind and be gentle. So it's basically simple. If you do something, it comes back to you. And if you kill, that will come back to you. And then paragraph 7 and 8. Here, students, some men or women is given to injuring beings with hand, with a club, with a stick, or with a knife. And because of performing and undertaking such action, on the dissolution of the body, after death, he reappears in a state of deprivation. But if he instead comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is sickly. This is the way, student, that leads to sickliness. Namely, one is given to injuring beings with a hand, with a clod, with a stick, or with a knife. But here, student, some men or women is not given to injuring beings with a hand, with a clod, with a stick, or with a knife. And because of performing and undertaking such action on the dissolution of the body, after death, he reappears in a happy destination. But if he instead comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is healthy. This is the way, student, that leads to health. Namely, one is given to injuring beings with a hand, with a clod, with a stick, or with a knife. So, if we want health, physically health, then we have to abstain from injuring. It's kind of easy to understand. If you go around and beat up others, that will come back to you. You will be beaten up somehow. And you will have bad health. Then 9 and 10. Here, students, some men or women is of angry and irritable character. Even when criticized a little, he is offended and becomes angry, hostile, resentful, and display anger, hate, and bitterness. Because of performing and undertaking such action, he might reappear in a state of deprivation. But if he instead comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is ugly. Ugly looking. This is the way, student, that leads to ugliness. Namely, one is of angry and irritable character, and he displays anger, hate, and bitterness. But here, student, some men or women is not of an angry and irritable character. Even when criticized a lot, he is not offended and does not become angry, hostile, or resentful, and does not display anger, hate, or bitterness. And because of performing and undertaking such action, he reappears in a happy destination. But if instead he comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is beautiful. This is the way, student, that leads to being beautiful. Namely, one is not of an angry or irritable character, and does not display anger, hate, and bitterness. And you can kind of see that normally. If you look at a person, next time you see a person which is really angry, he's just boiling over in anger and irritation, just look at that person, how he looks like when he's angry. It's normally not something you take to be beautiful to look at when somebody's really angry. You see it in his face. And that is something which comes back to him or her. So, if you want to be... let's see, where were you now? Yeah, if you want to be beautiful, then you have to work on your anger. And if you are irritable, see whether you can work on those, work on that. And then 11 and 12. Here, student, some men or women is envious, and one who envies, resents, and begrudges the gain, honor, respect, and reverence, and salutations, and veneration received by others. Because of performing and undertaking such action, he reappears in a state of deprivation. But if he comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is uninfluential. This is the way, student, that leads to being uninfluential. Namely, one is envious towards the gain, honor, respect, reverence, salutations, and veneration received by others. But here, student, some men or women is not envious. One who does not envy, resent, begrudge the gain, honor, respect, reverence, salutations, and veneration received by others. And because of performing and undertaking such action, he reappears in a happy destination. But if he instead comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is influential. Namely, and this is the way, student, that leads to being influential. Namely, one is not envious towards the gain, honor, respect, reverence, salutations, and veneration received by others. So, if you want to be influential, then don't try to avoid being envious and have some kind of grudge of others' gain and honor and respect. Then paragraph 13 and 14. Here, student, some men or women does not give food, drink, clothing, carriages, garlands, scents, unguents, beds, dwelling, lamps, to recluses and Brahmins. Because of performing and undertaking such action, he appears in a state of deprivation. But if instead he comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is poor. This is the way, student, that leads to poverty, namely, one does not give food, etc., etc., and lamps, the recluses and Brahmins. But here, students, some men or women gives food, and they give drink, they give clothing, garlands, and beds and dwellings to recluses and Brahmins. Because of performing and undertaking such actions, he appears in a happy destination. But if instead he comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is wealthy. This is the way, student, that leads to wealth, namely, one gives food, etc., etc., to recluses and Brahmins. So, I have a little bit of a problem with these two paragraphs, but this is basically about giving. So if you give, you get. And if you read the other texts in the collection of Buddha's teachings, what he's saying is that when you give something, the more pure you are yourself, and the more pure or developed the one you give to, the better the merit is. So if you give out of wrong motivation, and you give to somebody who is not such a good person, there are good merits in that, but not as much as giving with a pure heart yourself, and giving to a person which is really good, wholesome. And I think that's why the Buddha was using here the examples of Brahmins and recluses. In the time of the Buddha, priests of the Brahmanical tradition, the time of the Buddha. But basically, giving, you give, you get. So, if the idea to become rich, then generosity is something which should be developed. Then, paragraph 15 and 16. Here, student, some man or woman is obstinate and arrogant. He does not pay homage to one who should receive homage, does not rise up for one in whose presence he should rise up. He does not offer a seat to one who deserves a seat. He does not make way for one for whom he should make way, and does not honor, respect, revere, and venerate one who should be honored, respected, and revered, and venerated. And because of performing and undertaking such actions, he appears in a state of deprivation. But if he instead comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is low-born. This is the way, student, that leads to a low birth, namely, one is obstinate and arrogant, and does not honor or respect and revere or venerate one who should be honored, respected, revered, and venerated. But here, student, some men or women is not obstinate and arrogant. He pays homage to one who should receive homage. He rises up for one who should, in whose presence he should rise up. He offers a seat to one who deserves a seat, makes way for one whom he should make way, honors, respects, reveres, and venerates one who should be honored, respected, revered, and venerated. And because of performing and undertaking such action, he appears in a happy destination. But if he instead comes back to the human state, then wherever he's reborn, he's highborn. This is the way, student, that leads a birth to a high birth, namely one is not obstinate, not arrogant, and he honors, he respects, he reveres, and venerates one who should be honored, respected, revered, and venerated. And I see this is both leaders of a country, leader of religious activities, can be family members, parents, which through their effort should be honored for what they've been doing. There are lots of people who are helping others, and if we don't honor that somehow, don't respect that, the Buddha is saying that, if you do that, that's the cause of having a birth, an existence, which we can define as highborn. So if you want to be highborn, then honor, respect, venerate those who deserve it.
Some spiritual, so-called spiritual leaders could actually abuse that situation. They could recite this and say everyone's got to, follow their ideas and so forth. So you'd really have to, assess the person if they're worthy.
Yeah, absolutely. Even to the point, I remember reading this sutta from the Buddha. He is, when a spiritual seeker is to find a teacher, somebody he can respect and revere and get teachings from, the Buddha he's been very clear on advising monks and that you have to stay if you find somebody you think he's wise and you want to show him respect. You have to stay with that person for many, many, many years. 5 years, 10 years. And then, after many, many years, you learn that person to know whether he is the real thing or he's some, not a good person. So that goes for everybody, I think. And then the last thing about being wise, which is paragraph 17 and 18. Here, students, some man or woman does not visit a recluse or a Brahmin and asks, Venerable Sir, what is wholesome? What is unwholesome? What is blamable? What is blameless? What should be cultivated? What should not be cultivated? What kind of action will lead to my harm and suffering for a long time? And what kind of action would lead to my welfare and happiness for a long time? Because of performing and undertaking such action, he appears in a state of deprivation. But if he instead comes back to the human state, then wherever he's reborn, he's stupid. This is the way, student, that leads to stupidity. Namely, one does not visit recluses and Brahmins and ask such questions. But here, students, some men and women visit a recluse or Brahmins and ask, Venerable Sir, what is wholesome? What kind of action leads to my welfare and happiness for a long time? And because of performing and undertaking such actions, he appears in a good destination. But if he instead comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is wise. This is the way, student, that leads to wisdom. Namely, one visits a recluse or a Brahmin and asks such questions. So if you want to be wise, then ask questions. And then we're getting close to the end of the sutta. Thus, student, the way that leads to short life, the Buddha is basically concluding or summarizing everything. Thus, students, the way that leads to short life, so the way here is like activities you do on the way, things, the way that leads to short life makes people short-lived. The way that leads to long life makes people long-lived. The way that leads to sickliness makes people sickly. The way that leads to health makes people healthy. The way that leads to ugliness makes people ugly. The way that leads to beauty makes people beautiful. The way that leads to being uninfluential makes people uninfluential. The way that leads being to be influential make people influential. The way that leads to poverty makes people poor. The way that leads to wealth make people wealthy. The way that leads to low birth makes people low born. The way that leads to high birth makes people high born. And the way that leads to stupidity makes people stupid. And the way that leads to wisdom makes people wise. And then the Buddha is just repeating this standard phrase, which you find so many other places as well in the canon. Beings are owners of their action, students, heirs of their actions. They originate from their actions, they're bound to their actions, and they have their action as their refuge. It is the actions that distinguishes beings as inferior or superior. And with the Buddha, when this was said, the Brahmin student Subha, Tudeya's son, said to the Blessed One, "Magnificent, Master Gautama, magnificent. Master Gautama has made the Dhamma clear in many ways, as though he were turning upright what had been overturned, revealing what was hidden and showing the way to one who was lost, and holding up a lamp in the dark for those with eyesight to see form. I go to Master Gautama for refuge, and to the Dhamma and to the Sangha of bhikkhus. Let the Master Gautama remember me as a lay follower, one who has gone for him, go to him for refuge for life." And that's the end of the sutta. What do you think? Does this make sense? Does anybody disagree? Anybody have an alternative theory? We found one verse from Dhammapada. I can just add in the end. It's from Dhammapada 54, which kind of related to this. It's about the scent of flowers. It says that the scent of flowers, sandalwood, jasmine, or rose bay, does not go against the wind. But the scent of virtuous persons does travel against the wind. It spreads in all directions. It even spreads to other lifetimes. Okay? Please.
Bhante, somewhere else Buddha categorizes the Buddha sort of quantifies the amount of sin you make by killing. If you kill your parents, it becomes the biggest one, anantariya karma. Or if you shed blood out of Buddha, it becomes to the same category. But if you kill another animal or another person, it is not that much of a sin, as much as you kill your own parents or shed blood from Buddha. So in that way, Buddha tries to give some understanding, some meaning to the level of karma, bad karma you make by killing. So in that context, if you kill a mosquito that biting you, is it considered a big bad karma, or is it just one of those things you can neglect?
It was difficult to understand your question. You're asking about, for example, killing your own parents. That is kind of bad, really bad karma. But killing another person is not that bad karma. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
And the question was?
So the question is that we talk about killing of anything or anyone is not good. So killing a mosquito.
A mosquito, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how do you see in that context? I mean,
okay. So basically, what you're asking is the how bad it is when you kill something. If you can kill a mosquito,
yeah,
and you can kill a bigger animal, you can kill like a person, you can kill your parents,
or say white ants.
Yeah, correct. And the other places, as far as I know, this is commented or said by the Buddha that there is a difference. And one of the worst thing you can do as a human being is to kill your own parents. If you kill your own parents, you are, according to the Buddha, guaranteed of an existence in a really bad, dark type of existence, which we might can call hell or something like that, because it's such a bad thing to do. If you have your mother and your father, which have been caring for you for 20 years, feeding you, giving you everything, food, things, education, training, and if you kill your mother or your father, that is extremely somebody's been doing so much good to you and you kill that person, that is such a bad thing to do. And so if you kill a normal person, like, well, I don't know, another person which you maybe just meet in a pub somewhere, that is not that bad action, because you don't have that kind of relation with him. It's still really bad. It's extremely bad to kill a human being. And then even less, you kill like a mosquito. And as far as I remember, it's a bit about your effort. If you have to put in lots of effort, lots of actions, lots of will to do something, then it's worse. The karmic effect of that is worse. So if you kill your parents, that is really bad karma, which will come back to you. If you kill a cat, that is also bad, but it's not the same level. Was that enough answer?
Yeah, Bhante, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, that is just, for me, that's just another word for how much effort. If you, it's based on how much effort or intention you put into your doings. If you do something bad, and if you have to put lots of effort or intention into doing it. Because I think, this is my idea. Everybody knows that their parents have been helping you a lot. And to then be able to kill your own parents and have that in intention, you really have to have lots of a kind of intention to do that. To slap a mosquito, that can just happen in a fraction of a second, with just a tiny bit of intention, or even without intention, because there's just something itching on your leg and you just put your hand down and you kill a mosquito. But to kill a big animal, like an elephant or a human being, you really need to do that by purpose. And you need lots of effort and lots of intention to do that. So the more you put in towards something bad, the more bad will come back to you.
It's funny, I think the law has some elements of that as well with intentions. If you plan a murder,
then
I think you get the full extent. But if it's spur of the moment kind of thing, they allow for some sort of mental instability at the time that it's happened.
Yeah, I agree. I do agree. Okay. Sorry?
It's very difficult to believe that a person like Trump had done good karma to be born as the leader of the free world. And what good karma has he done to become like that? When you look at him now, it is very difficult to believe that he's a good person and done good karma to be born like that. Trump, the president of the United States.
Oh, Trump.
Yes.
Donald Trump. Okay. So you think Donald Trump is not that a good a person? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Why?
Okay. So, because Donald Trump, that's a good example. He's really rich. He is. Let's see. What's the point here? He's really rich. He seems okay, healthy, isn't he? Isn't he can have normal health? And is he beautiful? Well, is he influential? Yes. Is he high born? Was he kind of grown up in a respected, revered family? Absolutely. Okay. I don't know that. So he was born into a high, kind of prestige family. Yeah. Okay. Oh yeah. Okay. So he got that as well. Donald Trump is a good guy. Okay, and then yeah, lots of you. True. There's a reason why he was elected. Is he wise? Is Donald Trump wise? Okay, so there's a few people here who think not. So then he should start asking questions. But what was basically what was the question regarding him?
When you look at influential, rich people, the 1% of people who are wealthy and rich and influential and privileged, so does that mean that they have done good karma to be born like that, but they are not using that the good karma now? So do we have to expect that? It's really difficult to believe that people like that can be considered to have done good karma. Because just wealth and privilege and influence define a good person.
So basically, it seems like your perception of Donald Trump is quite kind of rusty, but you see that he has lots of these points. But as I understand this, he has done lots of good things in the past, which is coming back to him, both in most likely in previous lives, and also. He's done lots of good things in this life. He's been working really hard building this business, and I know that's hard work. I'm not saying that what he's, I don't know what kind of business he's running, but I know it's really hard work to build some kind of business, and to be able to do that kind of work, it takes effort, years and years and years. But when you do that, you also give so much. You give thousands of people work, money, a way to keep themselves alive. And he has created that. He has created an organization where people can come and earn money, and be part of a system which helps creating goods and services for a community. So maybe somebody can disagree with the ways and methods he might have been using, which I don't know anything about. So you think like somebody like him has lots of unhappiness?
Him or other examples of rock stars or very influential people with a lot of material wealth and looks and everything you could probably desire, but yet they are drug addicts or have a lot of mental health issues too.
That's my understanding as well. Lots of people who come into this human world and they have a really good starting position. They have, they're high born, they have rich parents, and they're smart, and they're beautiful. But they might not be wise, and they end up doing things which makes their own life kind of miserly and full of suffering and problems. So the as I see it, it's not that you do something in your previous life and that decides this life, because what you do in this life as well adds on to your karma. If you do lots of work, if you do lots of kindness, that comes back to you this life as well. It's not just what you've done in the past, it's only what is also what you've done in this life which pays back in this life. But the point from Buddha here is that it also goes to your next existence, the next type of life.
Enormous amount of good karma to actually reach the heaven realm. And then gets corrupted. Isn't that sort of what happens to most people? In the world, you know, like politicians, they get to a good state and then they get corrupted. Mara would be a typical example.
I think there's this saying that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And the more, if you end up in a position with lots of influence and lots of power, that's a reason for, I don't know, something mental, it just breaks you down. You get up, you end up with this enormous ego, and you just lose it, end up some kind of dictator.
I was thinking that also that maybe there's something in this that has to be really considered, because I guess as human beings, we can so quickly jump to sort of like assumptions and conclusions, and so become judgmental about someone who maybe is poor or ugly or something now, and be disregarding of them, saying, well, that's your tough luck because you've obviously done something bad in the past, sort of thing.
I've heard that is a lot in people who are Buddhists. They believe they use this as a way to put people down. I don't think there's any way to a way around this. I take this like to be like a law which really exists. But then if somebody is in that position, that they may be low on many of these factors, they are kind of poor and they are ugly and they are not wise, etc. That just means that needs to be developed by them. And if you use their characteristics to put them down, that person is the one who's doing bad karma. Okay, seems like we have a question from... Okay, we get three questions. And I'm not sure whether I will be able to answer these questions, but I can read them out. So the first question is from Ricky in the United Kingdom. What does Buddhism say about protecting yourself? And then a second question is from Matthew in the United States. What should be the most important teachings I should practice from the sutta? And the third one is Sayuri from Japan. Is it good to think that sick people are... Is it good to think that sick people are the consequences of their bad karma? So, the second question first, maybe. What should be the most important teachings I should practice from the sutta? I think that what should be practiced is just to see how your life are today. Are you low on one of these factors? And maybe that is an indication for that you have some kind of lack, you have some kind of weakness in your characteristics which could be developed. So if you are extremely poor, okay, more giving, maybe. And if you are have a very sickly body and had that for a long time, okay, that is maybe you should look into. So just look at how you are today, go through this point and see how are you on these factors and pick the one which seems most needed for yourself. That's what my answer for that question. And the question from Japan, is it good to think that sick people are the consequences of their bad karma? Is it good to think? I'm not sure whether this, what I really mean. Is it good to think that sick people are conscious of their bad karma? At least I can say that it is the teaching of the Buddha that if there's a person who is sickly in general, it's not that you have a flu, or that you kind of stumble and you fall over and break your leg or something. But if you have, in general, a body which has been struggling with a lot of health issues, that's how I see it, then that night, according to these teachings, that can be traced back maybe to your actions previously, even in previous lives. And is it good to think this? Well, I think so. The Buddha thought like that. And I take Buddha to be extremely wise. The first question is, I don't know. What does Buddhism say about protecting yourself? And I don't know how that question fits into the sutta we've been talking about. Okay. Like killing, for example. Yeah. So if you're taught by the Buddha not to kill and not to injure, etc., etc. But then if you are in a position where somebody attacks you, and you are in a position where maybe if you don't defend yourself, you will be harmed. And the way to stop being harmed yourself is to fight. Yeah. My answer is that your action more precise, these actions are intentions. All your actions you do is coming from some kind of intention. And if your intention is coming from a good place, like defending yourself, then it's not that bad thing. But if your intention is really bad, I just want to kill my mother or kill my father or kill this big animal out of just evil and hate, that's really bad. But if somebody attacks you and you defend yourself, and in that process you end up injuring that person, it's probably a bit bad merit in it as well, but it's not that bad. Because it's not your intention to harm them, but you end up harming them because you need to protect yourself. And I guess it's the same with killing. If you end up unintentionally killing somebody, it's not bad. It's not that bad thing. We have the rules for the monks about killing. That's one of the four, we call it the four parajikas. Meaning there's four rules as a monk. If we break them, we are automatically no longer a monk. And one of them is killing a human being. But it has to be intentional. If I, for example, or another monk who have a Buddhist monk ordination, if that person deliberately kill a human being, then it's a parajika and he's no longer a monk. But if he killed a human being unintentionally, like with an accident, then it's not. So the Buddha was very clear that the intention here is extremely important. So if the intention is to protect yourself, it's not that big a problem. I think that's the answer for to Ricky in the United Kingdom.
Drink drivers, they may not be intending to harm anyone, but their actions could. Drink drivers who don't take responsibility that they could harm as a result of their action, is that, how would you see that?
So basically you're talking about a drink driver, if somebody gets drunk and then goes driving and then maybe end up killing somebody driving. And the question is, well, is that bad? Because that person doesn't have an intention of killing that person.
The fact that they know that drink driving can... What's the word? I can't even think. But
unwholesome, for example.
So they know that it's not appropriate because it can alter their... responses on the road.
Yeah.
So, does that in itself make them, create intention, intention?
I think let's say two examples. Let's say that a person which is not drunk goes out and drives his car, and then by accident kills somebody. If you compare that with somebody who's drunk and then goes driving and kills somebody, if that those two scenarios, the guy or girl who has been driving with alcohol is probably doing the worst thing, having kind of which receive the worst bad karma, because they know they're doing something which is wrong, and they know that they might end up harming somebody. They know that their abilities to drive is reduced and the chances are higher to damage somebody. But again, it's not like intentional. It's not like this person, the third alternative, there's somebody who's driving a car and just see this person and just drive the car toward him and just to kill him. Mm. So I think that there are kind of levels of intention. Yeah. And the less intention, the less bad you do, the less negative karma is created.
Sure. I'm asking because I do know someone who who has, you know, has had accidents, who still drinks and drives occasionally, knows on one level that, that, you know, just think that their intention is not to do that, but still, I find it hard to understand why they can't consider that. That anyway, so, but you've answered my question. I suppose I'm trying to find it. I find it hard to think why they can't consider what their action could be doing. Or the risk of their action. So, in a way, I see that as, see, personally, I used to see that as, you know, not good intent. That's why I'm checking with you. But it's not a certain level. Okay.
I think it's just different people have, I can use myself as an example. Different people in different stages of their life have different levels of wisdom and knowledge and understanding.
Sure.
I remember when I was younger, when I got my driving license, me, like lots of others, youngsters, like to speed, drive a bit too fast. I didn't kind of drive any extremely bad, but it was kind of fun to kind of break the speed limit a bit when I was like 18 or something, 19, 20. But I remember once I was driving 10 kilometers away from where I grew up, and I was driving a bit over the speed limit, and I was kind of driving in a curve. I couldn't see anything in front of me. I was just following, and then as soon as I kind of came around that curve, I saw this kid staying just by the road. Close by the road, he can just walk out on the road, and I would have killed him instantly with the car I was driving. But he didn't. He just stood there by the road. And I thought that if I have ended up killing that boy, driving, speeding, I would have felt extremely bad afterwards. I would have felt better if I at least had followed the speed limit, because that's the recommendations from the government, lots of wise people who are trying to regulate the traffic. But if I intentionally break the speed limit just because I think it's fun and then end up doing something bad, I knew at that time that I don't want to be in that situation. So after 2 or 3 years, I stopped speeding in low speed zones, like 50 kilometers an hour or 60 or 70. I just kept to that speed limit because if I ended up harming somebody with a car, which does happen all the time, then I really want to try to avoid it. And if it happened, try to minimize the chance and do as well as I could. Luckily, I've not damaged anybody. I haven't killed anybody or anything with a car or anything, but it could have happened. I was so close. And that time, I was speeding.
Yeah.
So I think it's the same there. The thing is, you're young, you're stupid, you don't have wisdom, you don't have experiences, but later on you learn, you grow up, maybe do some mistakes.
Yeah.
That's probably what happened to, that might have happened to your friend as well. Just doesn't know yet. They haven't thought those thoughts
wisdom,
yet.
Yeah, the wisdom hasn't, yeah, just thinks it couldn't happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Okay. Are we happy? Is that, what is that, okay? It's the first time I've done a sutta class here, so I tried to find something which was easy and still kind of interesting and good kind of guidance for as we go through life and try to develop ourselves. Yeah. Okay. So it's like Araham. Do we stop with that normally? Okay.